Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming at you on a Monday morning. A great week for the Milwaukee Brewers. They go 5-1 against teams they frankly should beat up on, but still, it never quite always works that way in Major League Baseball. They sweep four games against the Arizona Diamondbacks after splitting with the Detroit Tigers. They are seven games above 500. They are tied for first in the National League Central. Brewers offense getting well. That's the big story, which we will discuss here this week on the podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm the host, and on the other line is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Tom saw it firsthand at American Family Field, the home run derby Brewers, a team that could not buy offense for the first several weeks of the season. Suddenly it's got a power thing going on. 17 home runs in these past six games, and really 16 in the last five. They only hit one on Memorial Day to start the week on Monday. There was Christian Yelich and Daniel Vogelbach on Saturday in the eighth inning, hitting a couple home runs that gave him the lead. There's Daniel Robertson and Tyrone Taylor accounting for the only two runs on Sunday. It was across the board. Everybody's hitting home runs now. Tom, you saw it. I mean, does it feel like this is a legitimate sea change for the offense? Was it just the pitching that they were facing, or like, well, what is going on? This team is suddenly an offensive juggernaut.
Well, I think there are many factors at play. One that is indisputable is that the weather got pretty warm, you know, all of a sudden. I think from one weekend we went to the 50s, from the 50s to the 90s. That's a pretty dramatic increase in one week. And the, you know, roof came open, the panels came open, and the ball carried. Remember all the long fly balls that died on the warning track and April and May? Well, they're not dying out on the warning track anymore. They're going out. But some guys are starting to pick up the pace, too. I mean, Christian Yelich, you know, is starting to come around. If he finds it, it's going to be a huge, huge, huge difference for the team. They've had so many guys scuffling back and forth. But, you know, they've had many different guys hit home runs, too. I think nine or ten. Robertson might have been the 10th different guy yesterday to hit home runs in this spree of home runs. And so a whole bunch of different guys are doing it too. And, you know, the pitching remains tremendous for the most part. Corbin Burns threw the ball as good as you can throw the ball Sunday. The big story of their season so far remains the big three starting pitchers, Woodruff, Burns, and Peralta. Those three guys have been tremendous. I mean, they might all three make the All-Star team.
Yeah, and they might get your closer on there too for good measure with Josh Hader and your starting catcher, Omar Narvaez. We could talk about all those guys. And every week I do struggle trying to pick out which pitcher to talk about because, like you said, they're all so good. And last week it was unusual that Corbin Burns actually had a rough outing. On Sunday he struck out 13 guys, so that's not going to be a trend. But the guy I really want to talk about is Freddie Peralta. On Friday night, he got into the eighth inning, one out in the eighth, 7 1/3, no hit innings before Nick Ahmed's flare single on a slider where he just threw his bat at it, which accounted for the only hit of the game. It's the second one hitter that Freddie Peralta has prominently played a role in this season. There was one in April against the Cubs where he threw five innings, but as dominant as we've seen him, it was on his 25th birthday, and that alone is exciting because he's only 25 and he's dominating big league hitters. This has just been an absolute breakout for Freddie Peralta. And, you know, Tom, this happens a lot this year where the Brewers get to the fourth or the fifth where they have, you know, they haven't given up a hit yet with Burns or Woodruff typically. And this is a game where I really thought the no-hitter was happening. You had that great catch by Luis Arias, and at that moment, I was certain. I wasn't sure if it'd be Freddie the whole nine innings, but I thought that no-hitter was happening. How did you feel as you were watching that game unfold?
Yeah, they might have had to have had a combined no-hitter because I don't know if Council would have let him go back out there at over 100 pitches in the ninth inning. That would have been a very tough, tough, tough call for Council, especially in front of the home fans. Who've been waiting so long for the second no-hitter in franchise history. Then look at the hit. I mean, that's so baseball, you know, to have some hard-struck balls, great defensive plays made on, and then a guy puts his butt in the bucket, leans over the plate, and one-hands a breaking pitch off the plate. It was actually a very good pitch. It's, you know, kind of where you want a breaking ball, down and away. It just dunks it into left field. What our beat core calls a stroinker, you know, and no chance to catch it. It's not like it hits so far in front of Yelich. It's not like anybody could lay out and try to catch it, you know. And so that's just so typical. We laugh. Sometimes the worst thing you can do is hit the ball hard, yet that's what they tell every hitter to try to do.
Yeah, and the guy before him hits the ball hard right at Christian Yelich, kind of a sharp opposite field line out. And then Ahmed, same direction, way different velocity, but.
So, and it's usually the Nick Ahmeds that do it too. It's not, you know, it's not like somebody like Goldschmidt or Arenado or somebody like, it's almost always a little bit somewhat obscure and not great hitter who does it.
Erik Sogard broke one up last year against the Twins in the ninth inning against Kenta Maeda. Brewers were no hit later in the year, but yep, you're absolutely right. It's the scrappy scrappy hitters that no one's thinking about who find a way. We've talked about what makes Freddie so good now, and the revelation of additional pitches in his arsenal has really helped. But every day I feel like, you know, I keep thinking we're gonna get some of that sort of roller coaster with Freddie where. You know, he walks a few guys, loads the bases. We've seen that this year where he escapes his own jams, but I feel like, he's really good. Like you said, we're talking about all-star level pitching at this point. And I think I saw a stat that his batting average against guys against him, it's as low as it's ever been in baseball history. Like if the season ended today, which of course it's a tiny sample, this would be as good as it gets with Brandon Woodruff right behind him as the second best mark of opponent's batting average. They gotta be pinching themselves with what they have with Freddy Peralta right now.
I think you know, his strikeouts per nine innings, I think only Jacob deGrom has a higher strikeout per nine innings among qualified starters in those rankings. So, you know, when you're second to Jacob deGrom, that's a pretty good, you know, it's okay to not get the blue ribbon when deGrom gets it. It's okay to get the next one or not get the gold medal. It's okay to get the bronze medal when deGrom's getting the gold. And so if you're in, and Woodruff's right, as you just mentioned, Woodruff's right up there with them too. So, you know, all three of those guys can do something that stops teams from scoring. They can strike you out. You know, that's what sets them apart. They all have very high strikeout rates. And when they get in trouble, they can just strike you out, you know. And that's what's made Hader such a dominant closer during his career. When he gets in trouble, he strikes you out. And almost they can sum it up, it seems like, too. They can say, okay, I got to strike this guy out. And then they do it. And so when they can do that, when they have the ability to strike you out, it's such a weapon. You know, very, very few guys can just seemingly summon up a strikeout when they need it. And, you know, Freddie's been very interesting to watch because we've seen him evolve from a thrower into a pitcher, you know, and through Chris Hook, we talked to Chris Hook about him, the Brewers pitching coach, Sunday morning on a Zoom, and he said all the credit goes to Freddie. He just has worked his butt off. He went to winter ball and experimented with, you know, breaking pitches and changed the grip on a slider and made it better and just devoted himself to throwing a changeup too, that he's always trying to get better. He's a very competitive person. And so, you know, how good is that 5-year, $15 million contract looking right now for the Brewers?
It was a little head scratching at the time. It was maybe a little bit of why? Why did the Brewers need to make that move? And now it looks like absolute genius, especially because, you know, right now people are still a little worried about the Christian Yelich contract, which we'll talk about him in a second. But yeah, and he is a great competitor. He's also very laid back in these post game interviews. He's not your typical intense, you know, I'm gonna give short answers to things. He's just a fun loving kid,
He's a joy. He's a joy.
yeah.
An absolute joy. And that's why it was fun to watch him, you know, with this no hitter because, I mean, he's always got a smile on his face, but he was really into it. And, you know, he's like the hardest person on the team to not talk to, but that's, you know, the superstition of the no hitter. You know, everybody's trying to stay away from him in the dugout, and he's like, wants to like converse.
Yeah, he's it's good to see his success. The Brewers have won 9 of 10. You mentioned Josh Hader didn't need him on Sunday. Well, they probably could have used him. It was a 2-0 game.
Yeah, off limits. Off limits, I believe, would be the phrase for him on Sunday.
Yes,
He's, they're, and we've talked about this on the podcast before. They win. They almost always win close games. So their high leverage relievers are just almost always in play. And I tell you one thing, and we were talking to Chris Hook about this too. I told him that our baseball writers chapter, we give these awards out every year, and we have an unsung hero. Every year. And right now, the leader in the clubhouse is Brad Boxberger, because he just takes the ball, and he did it again Sunday to close the game. That guy just has, I don't think his arm is actually made of rubber. I don't think that's allowed, but it almost seems like it is.
Yeah, he's been very, very solid. And he actually, going back to that Freddie game, that first one hitter, he closed that one out on his first day with the Brewers after he was recalled from the alternate training site, and has been very solid. He's given up a couple home runs and he's had a couple hiccups like a lot of guys, but he
But
has
look how
really,
much he's pitched. Look
I
how much
know.
he's pitched. I mean, you're gonna have a bad one every now and then when you just pitch so much.
Yeah. He's been extremely valuable, especially for a team that traded two relievers. And, their bullpen does seem like it's more vulnerable without JP Feiereisen and Drew Rasmussen. And, it doesn't necessarily mean because of that, but, we've seen Brent Suter get roughed up a little bit more than he typically has. Devin Williams, sometimes it seems like he's back to what he was doing in 2020, and sometimes it seems like he's still developing. And I think that might be, that might be part of the equation with him, is he's still developing. He's a young guy who's, really only in his, I mean, this will be his first full season, like real full season of Major League Baseball. So it's sort of something that's easy to forget when you saw what he did last year. But you're exactly right. Brad Boxberger, a guy who wasn't clear if he'd still be in the organization after, after spring training, he could have gone somewhere else, right? With him and Jordan Zimmermann, both could have decided to
Yeah,
move on.
he had the right to go elsewhere, and they, sort of begged him to stay. They said, we think we are going to have a place for you, and so made, it was a non-roster invitee, and so and he, look at his baseball reference stats. He's been a closer and a very successful one. He had, I think, 42 saves one year. So this guy is a guy who knows, and he just seems to have the lowest heartbeat, doesn't he? I mean, it's just like he's going for a walk in the park when he goes out there in these tight game situations. You don't see like any, he shows no stress whatsoever. So it's just all part and parcel of their pitching. It doesn't do any good to have a great starting rotation if you have a terrible bullpen. Because then they just blow games behind the starters, and there's lots of teams out there that can tell you about that. You got to have it all together, and their pitching's been good. They still make the most of the least runs of just about anybody in baseball. They're, I don't know, last time I looked at their run differential, it was still minus. Yet they're tied their high water mark for games over 500. You say 7 over. That ties the highest they've been above 500. So they're making it work.
Yes, Brad Boxberger, 41 saves in 2015 with Tampa Bay, 32 in 2018 with Arizona. He gets his second save of the year against his old team on Sunday. He's like you said, one of the linchpins, the unsung heroes of what they've got going on. We're one game away from that 60 game mark. So we're basically almost to what they did in 2020. Never got above 500 at all in 2020. The offense has been a little bit worse this year, although maybe starting to show some signs, like we said. And here they are, like you said, 7 games above 500, high watermark of this season. Christian Yelich, a name that I mentioned, he hit a couple home runs this week. He also hit a ball that almost could have been another home run. I'm not sure if that ball leaves the park on Sunday, but at the very least, it's up against the wall when he
Right.
was robbed there. I believe that was Pavin Smith who caught the ball for
Yeah.
Arizona. So obviously, you're starting to see some signs with him. We brought that up before when it was one really good game on a Sunday and it didn't ultimately translate to sort of a sustained success. I've been looking at his splits, trying to figure how he was just so bad against right-handers last year. He's evened that out a little bit this year, so it feels like we're getting there. It feels like the worm is turning here. What are you seeing with Christian Yelich? Are we finally at a place where we could say he's going to be he's going to be back to close, close to what we're hoping for with Christian Yelich?
Well, he's gaining traction in two different areas. One is just playing. They eased him back in, as you would expect when he came off that back injury. They didn't let him play too many back-to-back games. Now they're just not worrying about that as much. They're letting him play almost every day. We'll see what they do starting tomorrow, because they're gonna, after this off day today on Monday, they're going to play 33 games in 34 days going into the break. It's going to be probably the most telling part of their schedule. I think we're going to know an awful lot more about this team at the All-Star break, just how they survive both pitching and hitting this gauntlet they're coming up against on the schedule. But so that's one way. He's just out there more. And then the other is you can see him starting to feel more comfortable, starting to have better swings. He's not quite there yet, but he's inching there. And when he gets there, it's the pitchers are going to be the ones who are in trouble, because he has a history of getting hot and just doing, some remarkable things over a short period of time. So he's already hit. That was an awful big homer he hit on Saturday, right after the Diamondbacks had scored three runs to tie the game. Off Suter. He hits a home run, then Narvaez, who's been their best guy, comes up behind him and hits another one. But that was a big home run. So he he's hit a few big home runs lately. So it's easy to hit a home run in the eighth inning of a 10-0 game, you know what I mean? And that just doesn't mean anything, but he's hit some ones that have been meaningful.
An opposite field shot too on Saturday into that, into that bullpen, that home bullpen. That's just vintage Christian Yelich. Like when he's just sort of flicking his wrists and sending balls out there. I mean, and maybe the ball is flying a little bit more because of the heat or whatever. But that is definitely a good sign
It
for
is,
Yelich.
because generally when you're driving the ball the other way, and that's what Castanheira did when he was going good, is he hit the ball to right and right center a lot. It just means you're staying on the ball and going with the pitch and not rolling over and into a 4-3 ground out. You're just going with the pitch and driving it that way. That's generally a sign that you're having good at bats.
Speaking of Castanheira, I said on the podcast last week that they're not going to send him down this week, and then by Tuesday, I thought, well, that was a dumb thing to have said. They're probably going to send him down. He had been in a really huge struggle since coming back from that torrid stretch in Nashville at Class A, Triple A, I should say. He came back and he was like 1 for 23 or something to start with. He did have a double on Sunday, which is a much needed bit of fresh air for Castanheira, but. I found myself pretty surprised midweek that they were not going to send him back to Nashville. It seemed like, it seemed like that he needed another palate cleanser, maybe this time extended time down for a couple weeks. But they elected to keep him up. They were not putting him in the starting lineup against right-handed pitchers that they saw late in the week. And then he did finally get some action late. Give me a sense of where you think this is headed with Keston here. Are they just going to try to ride this out on the big league level for another week or two, or is it all up in the air? How would you look at it?
Well, here's my take on why they kept him in the big leagues this time. So, he looked lost. They sent him to Nashville. He had nine great games, was player of the week in the league, and then he came back and was immediately lost again. So, they need their coaches to, work with him and figure out what's going on, and have that association work, and not have him go elsewhere, go good, and then come back and struggle. So they're basically having a hitting clinic for him with Annie Haines and Jacob Cruz, so they can work it out here and have hands on and eyes on what's going on. And Annie Haines, I give him credit, because he could have been careful. When we asked him yesterday, Sunday, about here, he could have been careful and said, "We got a long ways to go, just buckle up." Instead, he said, "I think he's really close to coming out on the other side." So that's a really strong thing to say when a guy's been scuffling so hard just to make contact. But they're trying to show confidence in him. They're trying to build his own confidence up. So, while they're facing right-handed pitchers, it allows them to play Vogelback at first and just let Hira do lots of work, during the day and right and during BP, and keep working with Haynes to try to get this thing squared away. So they're just keeping him in their own laboratory, not in Nashville's. And so we'll see if that works. A lefty pitched yesterday, so they let him play, and he did have a ringing double to center. which was good to see driving the ball right back up the middle. But like you said,
Yes.
he's still having contact issues. And that's what they've got to figure out. You know, he's always had a lot of swing and miss, so people need to get over that a little bit. He's always had a lot of swing and miss, but he's always had real good slugging to go with it. Last year, not so much, but he still hit 13 home runs last year in 60 games. It's not like he never hit a home run. But this year, just no slugging to go with those strikeouts, and you just can't do it that way. So we'll see. It'll make a big difference if they can get him squared away. He's still a young hitter, and they still have high hopes for him to have a good career with them. So we'll see. That's just something. Who knows how that's going to work out? The kids always hit until last year, and so let's just see what happens there. I don't see how anybody can predict what's going to happen.
Colton Wong injured earlier this week. That definitely would be a pretty bad thing for the Brewers under normal circumstances. Their offense somehow was able to obviously overcome that and have probably its best week of the season. Losing Wong hurts, especially because this is the same injury that sidelined him earlier, and it sounds like he's going to spend more time on the injured list this time around to make sure it gets right. But if there is a silver lining, it's that Luis Arias pressed back into duty now at second base. Again, second base is more natural position. If you ask a lot of Certainly, when you ask people when he was traded, they would have said second base is his more natural position. And if you go back to last Sunday, that's 8 hits in 7 games for him, a couple home runs. He's driving the ball. He's making great plays in the field. He looks very comfortable all of a sudden, which was definitely one of his bugaboos at shortstop. We mentioned the great diving play he made to preserve Freddy Peralta's no-hitter on Friday night, but just in general, he looks so much more at ease. I don't know what your impression is of him, but right now it looks like they may have reclaimed a little bit here with Luis Arias.
Well, yeah, I think I've mentioned on the podcast before that a lot of scouts had told me they thought the guy was going to be a second baseman, not a shortstop, and it certainly didn't work out well for the Brewers putting him at shortstop. Yeah, losing Wong would have really been a bad thing, a worse thing for the Brewers if Urias was still the shortstop, because how would you have covered that position, you
Right.
know? And also with Hira struggling, it's not like you could put him back there and then let Vogelbach play first. But because Adames, you know, is the shortstop now, it freed up Urias to play second base. And he had been swinging the bat better recently. And so it has let him, you know, at least keep his bat in there. And he does, as you know, look very comfortable at second base. He's played a lot of second base in his career. And so it just dovetailed pretty nicely. Normally, they would not have good coverage for a Gold Glove second baseman, but it has allowed them to have more coverage. And you know, we can't understate the impact that Adames has had on the team, because I'm pretty sure they're 12-3 since they traded for him, and that's not just coincidence. He's had a big role in some of their wins offensively, and he just locked down the position defensively that had become a real problem because of Urias's throwing yips. So whether it's Wong at second or Urias at second, when you pair them with Adames at short, it's a way better team.
Willy Adames hitting some majestic home runs here. So far it's kind of this weird trend where he homers and the Brewers go up and then they give back the lead right away. That's been the case like 3 times. I don't know what's up with that, but absolutely true. He's just I think stabilized is the word I used last week. He seems to have stabilized a lot just by being there at shortstop, being effective offensively. There's got to be something to the batter's eye situation in Tampa Bay. A lot was made of the splits, home road splits, how he was a better hitter on the road when he was with the Tampa Bay Rays. And I know that a lot of hitters will say that American Family Field is a comfortable place to hit because the batter's eye is so good. It's such a good backdrop. And man, maybe there is something to that because Willy Adames just looks great, just tearing the cover off the ball. As far as other bats for them to add, I mean, do you see this team getting aggressive like they did with Willy Adames trading so early in the season, or do you think because they seem to have stabilized a little bit that they're more likely now to wait closer to the trade deadline before they really start addressing more, opportunities to upgrade on their offense?
Yeah, I mean, that was a special situation. They had to fix shortstop right then, or they were in trouble. So they did that. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with what they've got. They have some guys that are starting to swing the bats better. They like the way Adames is swinging. They like the way Urias is swinging. Yelich is coming around. Narvaez has been good. Garcia's been streaky, but acceptable. They're still, with Lorenzo Cain hurt, Jackie Bradley Jr. just hasn't been able to get going. He's had a couple of big hits, but in general has not been able to get going. And that's opened some playing time for Tyrone Taylor, and he's taking advantage of it, and he's got some big hits for him. So I think that they'll go with what they have now and mix and match with their players that are on the roster now. And then, the trade deadline really isn't that far away. When people start looking at, and then we'll see how aggressive they are. When they had those really good playoff teams in 2018 and 2019, they would be aggressive, and they went and got Moustakas, Scope, who didn't work for them, but they still went out and did stuff at the trade deadline, and so they've shown a willingness to do that. But we'll see. Their pitching's been so good that they may think they have enough offense.
Of course, Jonathan Scope burning his old team with the Tigers this week, hitting was he one of the guys who hit two home runs? I forget how there was a game
Yeah,
where
he was what, four guys hit two. He did. Yeah. Well, I mean,
it happens.
the one thing we knew about Jonathan Scope when he left Milwaukee is he was going to hit better wherever he went than he did with the Brewers, because he didn't hit at all.
That's true. I will never forget the home run he hit off Madison Bumgarner after Bumgarner and the Brewers got into a little, he hit the batter, and then Scope comes up, hits the grand slam. Very awesome moment. Weren't many moments like that with him in Milwaukee, but that was a good one. And Tyrone Taylor, like you mentioned, also had two home runs in that crazy game on Tuesday, where four guys, Colton Wong being the other Brewer, hit two home runs in the game. Eric Haas for the Tigers as well. What a weird game. I never thought I was gonna see a 10-7 game with this Milwaukee Brewers team, but
Yeah,
there
that
it
was
was.
a very aberrational game, and they lost the game, but it kind of got the offense going for a few days. They picked up, and Arizona comes in, and they've now lost 17 straight road games. It's just an incredible number to be losing them. And so, I wrote that it's okay to kick a team when they're down, because that's what you're supposed to do. When a team's struggling, you're supposed to beat them. I can tell you one thing: the Giants and the Padres and the Dodgers have done a whole lot of beating of the Rockies and the Diamondbacks in that NL West, and it has a lot to do why their records are so good. So you have to beat a team when they're down, and the Diamondbacks were down, and the Brewers beat them. It's really hard to sweep a four-game series, really hard. So the amazing thing about Nashville winning 15 in a row, or 16, whatever it was, they swept 2 6-game series.
Yeah, the AAA schedule is really bunched up in kind of a post-COVID landscape. They're trying to minimize travel, and yeah, 6-game series in Nashville, and on the road too. They won those first few games on at home, and the rest were all on the road. I think 12 of those games were on the road, so maybe only 11, but
And
that
then they
is.
got shut out 2 straight games, so they obviously just wore themselves out.
Yes, although Aaron Ashby did look good, that's a guy who I think is going to pitch for the Brewers here before the season's over, whether in the
Definitely.
bullpen.
He'll definitely pitch for the Brewers this year.
Yeah, I think so too. That guy's having a great showing in Nashville. Tuesday, that game against the Tigers, that Tuesday game, that's actually the first game I personally attended. I was in the stands for that first one since 2019. That's the first game where no longer were fans asked to wear masks at American Family Field. They had opened up a few more concession options. Things were kind of feeling, to me, they felt fairly normal. I know they're still at 50% crowd. We're not going to get to 100% until later in June, but how have you noticed crowd reaction? Is it starting to feel a little bit more on par with what you'd expect, as we get into the weekend with the hotter weather? What has been your experience at
Yeah, I mean,
American Family?
they're definitely part of the game now. Especially when the team was winning at home those last 4 days, and they're behind the pitchers at the end of the games to close out the games. They're behind the guys hitting home runs, so I think it makes a big difference. And they've now had a couple of crowds in the 20s, which is,
Yeah.
That's pretty good. That's basically 50% capacity. And so, and as so they had the tropical tailgate Friday instead of the Arctic tailgate to sell tickets for the 100% capacity. And they're going to have what they're calling reopening day on June 25th. So I don't think we'll have a split record like we did in 1981, But we will have a reopening day. Yes, yeah, so it's nice. You know, we're not wearing masks in the press box anymore if we're vaccinated. So it's starting to feel more like real baseball, and I think it does make a difference. And the players will tell you it makes a difference.
1981 wouldn't be that bad. They'd be in the playoffs in some way, shape, or
Yeah, they
form.
won the second half that year. Yeah, we weren't.
The schedule that you mentioned, it doesn't get much harder yet. They're going to go to Cincinnati starting on Tuesday for 3 games, then return home for a 6-game homestand, the Pirates, and then again the Reds. Then they go out west to face the Rockies and Diamondbacks. Rockies again at home. I mean, really, they're not facing a team that's, I would say, even like classified as good right now until June 28th when the Cubs open up a 3-game series at American Family Field. So, hey, if they can keep this beating up on bad teams thing, they're going to have a pretty rosy looking outlook by the end of June. Obviously, we saw that in 2019. It doesn't always work. They had a stretch
Yeah.
like that, and they did pretty mediocre through the middle part of the season before they picked things up in September again. But the
Well,
schedule looks good.
what's going to challenge them more than their opponents is the schedule itself. Starting Tuesday, they play 33 games in 34 days. They only have one off day after today, today being Monday. They only have one off day between now and the All-Star game, and this is by far their most grueling stretch of consecutive games. And so, you know, they've been trying to go, if not with a six-man rotation, at least using off days to give guys 5 days of rest. So now they're gonna re and then the bullpen too, you know, is because we talk about all the time about how they just don't seem to get good separation with their wins, and they have to use their high leverage guys a lot. So how they're able to keep their pitchers going without getting fatigued here between now and the All-Star break is going to be huge, absolutely huge. And so we'll see what they do. We're going to see Eric Lauer plugged in from time to time. We might, you know, who knows, maybe, I don't know if they're ready to bring Ashby up. I almost had the feeling when we see Ashby, it might be like Josh Hader in 2017, where they bring him up and put him in the bullpen, you know,
Or
and let him
Burns
be
in 2018, same thing.
let him be just a lights out strikeout guy out of the bullpen and work his way in. But but they may bring him up and make some starts. He's got a lot of talent, but they've got to figure out a way to get to the All-Star break without having guys get run down here, and that's their challenge going forward.
Adrian Hauser he'll probably start that series against the Reds. One of the more underrated performances this week on Tuesday when he came in and gave 5 innings of relief when Eric Lauer got hit around quite a bit, and that saved some bullpen arms potentially, kept things intact for the 4 wins to come against Arizona.
Yeah, he'll pitch Tuesday, so it's gonna be Hauser, Anderson, and
Should be Freddie,
Peralta.
right? Yep.
They'll be the three guys against the Reds.
They'll be tasked with slowing down Jesse Winker and Nick Castellanos. Nick Castellanos' 21-game hitting streak came to an end on Sunday, but he's had 2 hits every other game in the, I think, like 5 of his last 6 games. I mean, he's awesome. Jesse Winker, 3 home runs on Sunday. Those are the two main ingredients for the Reds offense and in a
Yeah,
good
we call
American
him Babe
ballpark.
Winker.
I know you do. Yeah, he's deserving of the title right now. He's on some kind of hot streak. Any last thoughts, Tom Hodricourt, before I send you away?
No, I what I just said about this upcoming schedule, I think that's what we're going to watch now is just how they make this. You know, the schedule seemed to give them an off day every time they needed one over those first 2 months to let them, you know, they're really invested in not having pitchers pitch on their normal 4 days rest. They really want them to have five, and they've really been careful with the pitch counts too. So that's the thing to watch. Keep in mind that they'll enjoy their off day today, but only one more coming before the All-Star break. That's kind of what I've got my eye on right now.
He is Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find everything he has at jsonline.com. Lots of coverage. Again, Brewers opening up a 3-game series in Cincinnati starting on Tuesday. Tom, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, JR.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will chat with you again very soon on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. Take care.